Welcome to the Campus Ministry Heritage and History Podcast Series from Dominican University of California. This podcast series has been organized by Sister Mary Sower and is made possible through the joint effort of Campus Ministry, the Communication and Media Studies Department, and Penguin Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to the 2020 Fall Dominican Heritage and History Lecture Series, sponsored by Campus Ministry. I'm Sister Mary Sower, the director. Father Edward Skillebeck, a Dominican theologian from Belgium who lived from 1914 to 2009, wrote that the story of Dominicans can only be kept alive by live Dominicans. We at Campus Ministry also believe in the gift of storytelling. Over dinner one night, I was thinking about what it must have been like to go to school in a four-story Victorian mansion and live with sisters. As our conversation continued, I realized that there were people at the table who lived that experience, and our guest today was willing to share both her experience and expertise regarding the buildings and properties that originally comprised Dominican College. And so today, we are honored to have as our presenter, Sister Joan Hanna. Sister Joan has been a Dominican Sister of San Rafael for 65 years. She has ministered in education, retreat work, and as the director of properties for the sisters. Sister Joan is a graduate of Dominican College and currently serves as a member of the Marin County Human Rights Commission, a board member of Marin Interfaith Council, and of Mission Dolores Academy in San Francisco. Welcome and thank you, Sister Joan.
Thank you, Sister Mary, and thank you all for joining us today. One thing that I thought maybe Mary was going to share is that I got so involved in my storytelling that my clock and my length of story have been challenged. So this is going to be part one of a two-part presentation, the second part coming in the spring. And so I say hello and welcome to Ancestry.Dominican. See how we grow. Properties and buildings, 1890 to, well, as far as we get today. Established and built and supported by the Dominican Sisters for 90 plus years. There has to be a context for any story, and so, especially for an ancestry story. So I'm going to go back to 1850, and it's what I call the backstory. And in 1850, there was a monastery in Paris, the Monastery of the Cross, where women prayed and followed the Dominican tradition. And there was also a newly appointed Archbishop of California, and he was coming from Rome, Archbishop Joseph Sadoc Alemany. And he, as he returned to California, left Rome and traveled up to Paris and visited the Monastery of the Cross, where he invited sisters to join him on his journey and his ministry in California. Marie Gomer, Sister Marie Gomer, was a 40-year-old woman who was studying for her final vows as a Dominican, and she volunteered. And so Archbishop Alemany, Father Villarosa, who was another Dominican, and Sœur Marie Gomer left the Monastery of the Cross and headed west across the Atlantic. And in that journey, Sister Marie, of course, only spoke French. And the Archbishop realized that that would not particularly work in native California. So he instructed her in English as they came across the Atlantic. They landed in New York, and then continued their journey south along the east coast of the estates across the Caribbean and to the Isthmus of Panama. There are many stories in our archives about that journey across the isthmus, but we need to get to 1890. They went primarily by mule, and I just have this image of them crossing the isthmus, I assume with guides, and the three of them, all Dominicans, the two fathers, the Archbishop and Father Villarosa, on one mule, and she, Mother Mary, on the second mule. And I think of them in their white habits and how that might have played out. And I don't know what the weather might be, but regardless of weather, it's just a question that I have in my mind. At any rate, when they got to the Pacific, they then boarded the Columbus to sail to San Francisco. And they entered the San Francisco Bay on December 6th of 1850. California had just become a state, and so there was a lot of excitement going on. However, they were not remaining in San Francisco. They were heading for Monterey, which was the diocesan seat and the present capital of the newly founded or newly accepted state of California. Now, at this point, realize it was Mother Mary. By the way, the term Mother Mary, we have traditionally up until 1971 given the title of mother to the person who has been elected, the sister who has been elected to leadership in our congregation. So I will refer to her. Sœur Marie Gomer is the person I'm referring to as Mother Mary. And just remember that she was alone in this little journey and at the invitation of the Archbishop to begin a school to educate the children of those living in the Monterey area. Well, she was ready to roll up her sleeves, technically or literally, and get a building that would serve as a school, a boarding school, a day school. She had faith that other women and others would help her with her endeavors. And indeed, her prayers, her faith was merited because even after just a very short time, only 3 years in Monterey, because Monterey then was no longer the capital of California, the capital was moved to Benicia. There were some others who had joined her, and in my adult years, I found out that indeed there was one of those early members of the congregation, Sister Rose Castro, who was Juanita Castro, and entered the community in 1851, is a distant cousin of mine. When the capital was moved to Benicia, that's also when the Archbishop moved from Monterey. And so Mother Mary felt that it was important that that she also move. And so the new seat, the new capital of California was Benicia. And so just try to imagine this. Mother Mary was closing the school, Santa Catalina, in Monterey. And so all of what they had accrued during those 3 years, pots, pans, books, supplies, furniture, clothing, students, whatever, was all, they were all packed up and put on a schooner and came up to Benicia, where they occupied St. Catherine's Academy. There were six sisters. Now that was just after 3 years in Monterey, six sisters, five novices, and imagine if you were the parents, 50 students by schooner to Benicia. I just can't imagine from Monterey to Benicia to say to your child, the sisters will take care of you, be good, and say your prayers at night. They built what they needed in Benicia, and they were there for some number of years when they realized that, well, first of all, they were there just a few days beyond a year that Benicia was no longer the capital of California, but Sacramento was the capital of California. Now, they weren't about to move to Sacramento because they had already established themselves in Benicia, and it was a very welcoming community. And they were pleased there. They had a boarding school that they had their 50 children, plus the ones who joined them from the neighborhood. Ultimately, the St. Catherine's Academy continued to teach until 1959, when it ceased as a boarding school. At any rate, during that time that they were in Benicia, there were several other parishes and locations where they had opened schools or they had been invited to staff parish schools. Just a couple three that come to my mind. One is that St. Rose Academy in San Francisco was established in, I believe it was 1862. St. Vincent's Parish in Vallejo had invited the sisters to come and teach there. And St. Vincent's School for Boys in San Rafael, it originally was called St. Vincent's School for Orphans, but it was called St. Vincent's School for Boys currently. It was established in 1855. And sisters had been invited there. And in 1868, for some 26 years, our sisters staffed the orphanage, both to supervise the children during non-school hours and instruct them during school hours. However, the growth of Benicia did not quite fit the vision of the large educational institution that the sisters were hoping for. And in 1887, Sister Lewis O'Donnell was elected to leadership, and she was a woman who had tremendous vision and energy and just an aura apparently about her. And I say that not because I knew her certainly, but I say that because she was elected to leadership in the congregation for 42 years. That's a long time to be in charge. At any rate, this woman with this tremendous vision was looking to see where another location might be that would be more opportunistic for boarders and day students in a larger setting. Remember, some of our sisters were at St. Vincent's School for Boys. Now, my imagination of the Marin County in the 1890s was just the rolling hills, the beautiful scenery, the quiet, the calm, the peace, the weather, and also a flavor of what the community in Marin County might be. And I do believe that word got back to Benicia that take a look at Marin County at San Rafael. And here we have, thank you, Sister Mary, we have Mother Lewis O'Donnell. She looks very quiet and calm and peaceful. But lots was going on in that head. So she had come over, and she and then the Archbishop of San Francisco was Archbishop Bruton. And the two of them looked around for property. Archbishop Bruton had his eye on a piece of property, and they conversed with a gentleman by the name of Mr. Coleman. Now, before we get into that, a little reality check for me, certainly, because San Rafael was growing. The mission was opened in 1817. St. Vincent's School for Boys, which I told you was established in 1855. City of San Rafael was incorporated in 1874. And the North Pacific Coast Railroad operated in Marin in 1874. The Boyd Estate was built, Benincasa was built, Edgehill was built, Falkirk Mansion was built, the Hotel Rafael was built. I just have a little point of interest on that. The Hotel Rafael opened in 1888. It was an elegant location for many in society circles. The owner was a German baron and was recalled to Germany in 1901. The hotel closed. At that point, it had a bit of a checkered past. The hotel was used as an emergency hospital in the 1918 pandemic, then was abandoned for several years. A group of businessmen bought it, refurbished it, wired it with electricity, and installed an elevator, and so it opened with a new future in 1921. An arsonist possibly a disgruntled employee, set fire to the fourth floor and the hotel burned to the ground, with no injuries or loss of life, in 1928. What remains is a pair of pillars located at Rafael Drive and Bell Avenue, which marked the entry to the hotel. Now, the hotel property was just south of what we now call, and we'll get to, Forest Meadows. All this is to say that there were major buildings completed in a relatively short period, maybe 5 to 7 years. Building supplies and labor must have been available. Construction, however, was rapid without compromising quality. In 1889, the property, the 10 acres, what we call Block 20, was purchased for $20,000. Mr. Coleman must have been intrigued by the future that Mother Lewis described because he kicked in $10,000 of that purchase, or reducing the purchase to $10,000. There was a neighbor, a Mrs. Powell, and she contributed $5,000 to the purchase of the property, and the final $5,000 was a loan from the Archbishop Reardon to Mother Lewis and the congregation. November 26th of 1888, with loans from the good old Hibernia Bank, the contract was signed for $100,000 to build this building you see on the screen in front of you, four-story building of some 200 and some odd feet wide by some 86 feet deep on the two wings on the right and left. We'll get into more detail on that. There were many comments in the archives about the dedication. By the way, the dedication, which was on July 21st of 1889, was well attended, and it was dedicated as the Dominican College of the Holy Rosary. And that was taken from our archives. Many people apparently attended. There was a ferry that came from San Francisco to Marin County. And this is not a picture of the dedication. Just hold off on that one. There were a number of people attending, and people came from the city. Remember, we have a school there. Family, friends, other sisters, maybe some of the ones from Benicia came, but it was very, very well attended. Somebody forgot to put out the guest book, so we don't know exactly who was there. The building on July 21st, and remember, built in 8 months. On August 8th, 1889, 8 sisters, some novices and postulants, moved from St. Catherine's in Benicia to Dominican Convent, Dominican College, the Mother House. There are many titles for this building, and I probably will interact with a number. But they came, 8 sisters, novices, and postulants, because the novitiate was being moved from Benicia to San Rafael. And that caused some sadness for the sisters who remained at St. Catherine's. They moved in. The building was heated by steam, lighted by gas lamps. There was an elevator shaft, but no elevator. And on each floor was a fire hose cabinet with a hose attached to the water supply. Can we go back to one, Mary, just for a minute? This is a picture of prior to 1910, and it's the building. Oh, it looks like it's a little wavy there on my screen. The students are in front, and it kind of is, for me, a picture of the number of students, the age of the students, the outfits of the students. I'm interested in some of these pictures because of what you can infer from seeing the pictures. So that was some of those were some of the students who were there at that time. All right, if we can have the floor plan. This was a more current floor plan than in 1889. So it was amazing to me the number of iterations that many of these spaces went through from the building to the time of 1990. On the first floor, there were classrooms, dining rooms, and recreation rooms.
Now, the two large rooms on the far left were always, up until later years, always dining rooms, either the sisters' dining rooms or the student dining rooms. In the very last year of the building, the building just on the far left bottom, which was the northwest corner, that became the archives. The floor of that building, it was fun to walk in on the floor no matter what the heat might be. As you walked in that building and you could come in that building, underneath the front stairs there was an entry. And the floor of that building was tile, not adobe tile, but a ceramic tile. And it always was cool. This is a picture of the college dining room sometime between, as you can see, 1890 and 1900, all set with table linens, and it looks like glassware there. So they had a formal dining room setting. The sisters' refectory, by contrast, was quite plain. This is as I remember it in the late 50s and all during the 60s. Not all during, but in the early 60s. We ate in silence, and the business was to listen to what was being read and enjoy your meal. And after Vatican II, we had a little more socialization during our mealtime. Is there another of the first floor, or are we going to the second? There we go, the second floor. This is the second floor of the building, and this was the probably more elegantly outfitted floor of the building. On the far left is the chapel, and the chapel was tall enough that it went through the entire second floor, third floor, and its roof was enclosed in the attic space of the fourth floor. I'll talk about the rooms first, and then I'll talk about the elegance first. The elegance of that floor is that it was all hardwood, and it was always kept very polished and buffed. The furnishings, the trims, they were 12 and 6 foot ceilings to 16 foot ceilings. So there was space for elegance. The parlors were outfitted very formally. There was a set of stairs that went from the first floor to the first floor to the third floor in the middle of the building, and they were just as elegant as the rest. It was polished wood, and they were fondly called the Golden Staircase. Back to the chapel. Thank you, Sister Mary, for getting me back to the chapel. This was the chapel in the early 20s. Again, I was not there, but it's the earliest picture I found of the chapel. The chairs that you see in the front, they're very practical. They were used up until the close of the chapel. They were each individual. There was a place on the back to put your book, and there was a kneeler attached, so they could be configured into either rows facing the altar or choir to choir, as you see the sisters sitting in their choir where we had our office prayers. This is a later version of the chapel after some renovations and upgrades. There's another picture of that same year period, which shows the two side altars. The one on the left to Our Lady holding the child Jesus, and on the right, St. Joseph holding a younger child. This was the chapel. It was obviously later than the first, but not quite as far as the last renovation, because the communion rail is still there, which was not subsequent to that. This is a picture of the side altar of Our Lady. And the interest for me in this picture is the size of the statue and the size of the novice who is lighting the candle. You can see that the statue was very, very close to life size. In fact, it still is. This is at the other end of the building. This is where the other large room, the Dominican College Library, about 1955. You can see the tables for study. There's some lamps there, the globe over on the side, and of course the shelves of books. This is the same room a little bit later with a little bit lighter. The same globe has continued with us. Whether it's the same lamps or not, I'm not sure. But I believe these tables then continued into future years and put end to end as one long table. This was the most recent iteration of that room, and that is the Sisters Community Room. I think this is wonderful because on the east side of the main building was a porch, and that was consistent on the first floor, second floor, and third floor. And so you had this lovely outdoor porch where you could enjoy the weather, whether it was cold and stormy and rainy, or whether it was warm and summery and shiny. But if you went, can we go back to the porch for 1 minute? Thank you. If you walk down this porch, the door at the far end would lead you to the hall just outside the chapel. And very faintly in the top toward the right of the door, there's somebody standing there, and right above that person is a large bell. Thank you, Mary. And that large bell is currently in the bell terrace between the administration and convent, Dominican convent. So that continues to be with us. This picture is a little out of time date, but it, for me, again, it's the students, upper and lower school students from Dominican College, Dominican Convent. And what I appreciate here is you have a sense of the number, and more importantly for me, the sense of the dress of the time. So then I think we go to the third floor. Oh, not yet. This is one of the parlors, and you can see it's a little more elegantly outfitted, and the girls and women in this picture are also a little bit more formally outfitted. The parlors could be connected, so it was one large room, more or less. We go to the third floor, and on the left is the second floor of the chapel, and there was a balcony there that you could access through the door from the third floor. This was for dormitory and bathroom space for both the students and the sisters. The corridor along that front side, that whole section there, which is partitioned off in this iteration, were dormitories. And there were also dormitories in two other locations. And on the far side, there were some individual rooms and bathrooms. There's also a set of stairs next to the chapel and a set of stairs at the other end, plus the golden stairs in the center. This is one of the dormitories, and you can see they're not very elegant. They're partitioned by either wood framing or by metal poles on which curtains would slide to separate each space one from the next, and then for privacy, to close it off from the corridor. Now, you can't see here too well, but the height of this is probably 6 or 7 feet to those partitions, but the ceiling was much higher than that. So there was, shall we say, common airspace above all of that. This is that, back for 1 minute. Oh, good. Those were spaces that were in the early days, but I have to tell you, I lived there in the late 50s and early 60s, and you know what? The beds may have changed, the chairs may have changed, the partitions did not change. Those were the same cloth partitions, the same cloth, as I lived with when I lived there in the late 50s and early 60s. You'll see in the close to the edge of the picture at the top, the gas lamps. Those were not the lamps that were there when I was there, but that was their lighting. We're on the fourth floor. Now, the fourth floor was not built out until 1910, meaning it was not finished inside. In 1910, when it was finished, it was consisted of some private rooms, and what was focused on was that far right wing on the south side of the building. That was what we called the annex. And that was going to be, or that was, the new location for the novitiate. the novices and postulants had lived in the dorms, as did all the sisters and students downstairs on the third floor, but now they had a space that was their own in the annex. And I found it interesting to kind of think about the partitions in the annex between the spaces was, should we say, a little upgraded. It was tongue and groove lumber, and they even had a door. However, those partitions only went up about 8 feet. So one more time, there was the common airspace above all that. This is looking from Grand Avenue toward Dominican Convent, Dominican College, the Mother House. You'll see the pillars, you'll see some gates. You see that the center round planted area, which continues, and the rather imposing gray stairs. This, if you turned around and put your back to the front door and looked down the gray stairs, this was the mode of transportation. Also, you see the circular garden. Oh, and look at the beginning of the palm trees back there. And you see the pillars and gates there. I think we have one of, yes, if on the back side, on the east side of the mother house, this would be if you walk down the olive tree path toward the east side and entry on that side of the building. Those olive trees were never harvested, to my knowledge, and they were very healthy, which we had to be careful of as we walked down the path in white habits, or as the birds flew over and deposited something on us from the olive trees. This is block 20, and the little patch that you see there in, let's see, where's my, in the 1980s, one important thing I forgot to say is just a year and a couple of days after the sisters moved in, Sister DeSales Kirk, who was one of the first leaders of the congregation, who must have had some business acumen about her because she encouraged the incorporation of Dominican College. And indeed, August 11th, 1890, the incorporation of Dominican College was consummated with the state of California. In the 1890s, there was not much growth enrollment, so the college level of instruction was delayed a bit, focusing on elementary and secondary college prep programs. They must have done a good job because in 1901, lower and upper schools were among the first private schools accredited by the state of California. Right now we're here in this one. The first purchase of land after the Block 20 was the purchase of a lot by the McKinnon family on the south side of Acacia, and it's where the current location of Guzman is, and was built there, the Lord's Cottage. It was the first land purchase and first building after the main Dominican College building. It was built as an infirmary and ultimately to serve all students, first grade through fourth year of college, with a focus on the boarding students. Between 1906 and 1936 was the greatest period of population growth on the campus. In 1907, Mother Lewis, no history of engineering or architectural study or anything, but Mother Lewis designed and had built the summer house, planted white and blue wisteria around the perimeter. And actually to this day, that wisteria continues to be there, covering the umbrella shape of the summer house. And it's just a treasure to behold when the wisteria is in bloom. Students enjoyed this lovely site and often classes would be held in the summer house. Perhaps it was this in celebration of the final payment of the mortgage held on the construction of Dominican College. And it was ceremoniously burned on the feast of St. Thomas, patron of schools, just 18 years following the issuing of the loan and the mortgage issuing. Lourdes Grotto was also built in 1907, and there are mixed messages on what the history behind that was. It is a scale building from Lourdes in France, And one story is that it was built in memory of a deceased Dominican student by their family. Another opinion is that it was built by the family of one of the sisters. It was part of the rosary procession that the sisters would pray the rosary as they processed to the grotto on the feast of the rosary in October. And so here you see exactly that happening. The next building that was built was St. Cecilia's Hall as a music conservatory. And that was built, if you stood at the back entrance, the east entrance of the mother house, to your right along Acacia is where St. Cecilia Hall was built. There were remnants of it in an area that we fondly called the Brick Court. You can see that it had a little more Spanish style to it. It was built for music practice rooms, instruction. There was no sense that there was any place for any concerts, but by the same token, this open area, this courtyard area, might have been a delightful place, as you can see, where some kind of presentations could be made by the music department. This is looking at it with a little offshoot from the summer house looking toward St. Cecilia Hall. This is the next building that this is St. Thomas Hall. It was built a much-needed dormitory and classroom space for the upper school. And it was with St. Thomas Hall, because of St. Thomas Aquinas, that was established the precedent of naming buildings after Dominican saints. This is the southern entry. This is the first floor. And if we could just go back for one second. Yes, that one. On the left, on the west side of the building, you see a little arcade way. Well, that was the breezeway that attached St. Thomas Hall to Dominican Convent, Dominican College, the mother house. Thank you. This was the first floor plan, and as you can see, the large room right there in the front center, that was the west side, that was a very large study hall that was also used for instruction, but remember this is a boarding school, so they had evening study halls as well. The classrooms were all the perimeter of that, plus on the left far, that little kind of jut out construction, that was a science room. And Sister Aquinas in her later years and the later years of the St. Thomas, she used that quite extensively for some of her research work. This is the second floor of that building. I forgot to mention that there is a staircase at the both at the right and left end of that building, both the north and the south areas. This was built both as dormitory space as well as library and recreation room. The large area on the lower side of the picture, which would be the west northwest corner of the building, was dormitory space. This also had the tongue and groove separations between the rooms or the spaces, the beds spaces, but still had the cloth between the corridors and the individual units. There was a smaller dormitory, back one bit, back one slide, please. Top left was a small dormitory. The center was a library, and on the far right was their recreation, the recreation room for the upper school boarding students. And on the light in this corridor was wonderful because it was natural light in the main corridor of the building. There was a skylight above it. And that always, you could hear the rain, you could see the sun, it was wonderful. And so we go to the fourth floor, which was all dormitory and bathroom space. And it was what I'm calling a rectangular donut. In the center was open space to the sky for those residents on the third floor, but on the lower level, they were the skylights that illuminated that corridor down there. All of these rooms were private rooms. There were bathrooms and accommodations. And you can see on that bottom the connection where it goes over to the mother house. Let's see, I think we have some elevations, do we? Yes, this is the southern elevation, the main entry to St. Thomas Hall, if you didn't come through the breezeway. That opened into that olive grove. Oh, that's a wonderful picture of it. You see the breezeway, you see St. Thomas, you see the olive grove, you see the basketball court, at least the hoop. The surfaced area here in this whole court area was called Hawthorne Court, and that's because those trees that are planted just behind that short brick wall, there's also a lawn area there, but all those trees and the ones that extend over toward where you can't see were hawthorn trees. And when they were in blossom, they were absolutely magnificent. St. Thomas has a long history, and this is a wonderful site of the main building, St. Thomas Hall, and we're going to get to the next building in just a minute. The college in 1928 and in 1915, the college began a relationship with UC Berkeley to establish a junior college in San Rafael, where the students would then matriculate to college. The first session was compromised of 3 students and 7 teachers, four sisters and 3 lay teachers. Now there's a ratio of teacher-student that anyone would love. In 1917, the college established a 4-year baccalaureate program and was the first Catholic college in California to grant a BA to women. The first class issued 4 degrees, 3 to sisters and 1 to a laywoman in both math and music. At the time of World War I, the college whose higher education for women were seen in a new light, and there was great interest. Crowding became a problem, and in 1918, the Ferndale property on Grand and Locust was rented for college dormitory space, as there were no resident halls yet. The last building that I'm going to talk about right now is Hanafee Hall, sometimes called the Barn, or the gymnasium and the pool. This building was originally heated. It was a wood structure, very unfinished wood, as I recall. It was originally heated by a large fireplace. It was the gift of John Hanafee, a yachtsman, in gratitude for the care of his niece, Charlotte Brown. These were used by Dominican College until 1983. But here we have a picture of, you can even see the logo on their skirts. D.C., Dominican College, Hanafee Hall, 1925. A dance class, an exercise class, not exactly sure what class it was, but they were active and they were looking like they were really enjoying their time, themselves. And we have, I think, one more picture, and that is the D.C. basketball team. Oh, wouldn't the Penguins just be jealous of those uniforms? I'm not quite sure about that. At any rate, this is commencement, and my assumption is it is the upper school commencement because they always had it in Hawthorne Court, and it was a wonderful celebration. And looking at the dress, it was probably in the 20s or 30s, and you can see guests in the Hawthorne Court on chairs. You can see other guests on the second floor and even some up on the top floor. This is the overview that kind of takes us to the end of part one. We have the main building, the Mother House, Dominican College. We have St. Thomas Hall is built out. We even have showing there St. Cecilia Hall. Right, and then over to the right, we're going to give you a little tweak of interest because this is going to be where we begin next time with the purchase of Meadowlands. Thank you so very, very much. I think there's one thing I would like to just say before we close or open to questions if there's time. You may remember we came into San Francisco Bay on December 6th, 1850. Well, next month on December 6th, the Dominican Sisters will celebrate 170 years of ministry in California, including our time of service in Nevada and Tijuana. We're grateful to all who have partnered with us in education, healthcare, retreat opportunities, and spiritual development, as well as our ministry in social justice. My gratitude to Mr. Jack Doran, the Congregational Archivist, for his tremendous assistance in researching this material, and in particular, the photos and documents. Thank you. Hope to see you in the spring.